Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
You know, throughout this year, especially after Circuit Breaker, we seem to be dealing with another week, another retail casualty, and the latest being Robinson's, 162 years old.
That's right. And it's always so disappointing, isn't it? Especially when you have a historic name that is going out of business. So Robinson's was founded in 1858. The departmental store recently announcing it's closing the shutters of the last two stores here, the Heron and Raffles City Shopping Centre.
It'll also close two stores in Malaysia. Robinson said it has begun the liquidation process for its stores following significant shifts from offline to online spending among customers, as well as weakened demand that was, you know, really pushed forward by the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, think about it. This is a department store chain that survived World War II, a major fire in 1972, and a few financial crises, but it has lost this game to COVID-19.
We actually study these, or we read about these things in school, in social studies. That's why I remember that fire, right? But was the pandemic the only factor, though? Were there other factors that contributed to its closure?
Really,
that's the question.
Yeah.
Lucas, top section head, digital marketing and branding for School of Business at Singapore Polytechnic, is on the line with us to help us out. Lucas, good morning. How are you?
Hi, morning. Doing good. Thanks.
Yeah, really good to talk to you. So, Robinson's, goodness me. Well, it's a sad moment, isn't it? It's been around for more than 160 years. It's closing all of these stores, both in Singapore and Malaysia. As someone who will have watched this sector for some time, was this news a bit of a shock to you? How did you feel about it?
Well, I mean, in the retail sector itself, we've been looking at it really closely in the last few years, and we've seen such shifts in the departmental store market across the different brands within the departmental store. And the one that was going to take the hit the worst, I mean, in terms of strategy, in terms of what they were doing, you can see how the rest of the departmental stores were changing up their strategies along the way. And unfortunately, Robinson did do a change of strategy, but with that change of strategy was probably something that was not going to help them survive this pandemic, or, you know, with the decline in retail, it wasn't really this pandemic. This pandemic just pushed them over the line. It wasn't really something that basically the strategy that they put in really wasn't working to help them survive the retail industry in the long run itself. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Lucas, we are talking about the retail sector this morning with a case study on Robinson's. And, you know, you've got these experts saying Robinson's had a confused identity. If you ask people, you may have heard some people say, Robinson's, neither here nor there. I mean, what are your thoughts on this confused identity?
Well, the confused identity came from, you know, that shift in strategy that they had when they shifted from, you know, Centrepoint to Heron. And I think for most consumers, it was Robinson's has been such a synonymous brand. They related it with certain goods and services that they could really get. And it's one of those things that the brand loyalty towards it is, like, for example, if you're always with Robinson's over the last many years, I mean, they've been around for such a long time and everything. So if you're always getting, like, for example, bed sheets, and every time you run out of bed sheets, you would just be going back to Robinson's to get bed sheets. You wouldn't be thinking about another departmental store to go because you're brand loyal in that sense. But when they did that shift in strategy, what happens to those consumers is that, for example, especially with that move to Heron, a lot of the products that they were carrying were kind of niche and kind of cult brands, and they were more upmarket in that sense. So what happens to a lot of these brand loyal customers is that they're going there, they're trying to find a brand, or they're trying to find the products that they used to get, and they're not there anymore. Or rather, they're carrying a lot more upmarket, upscale products, and it's not within the price range that is acceptable and affordable for these consumers to continue purchasing from Robinson's. So naturally, as a consumer, you're going to think like, okay, where else can I get it? And in this digital age, when you can't get your product from a store that you've been going to, it's as simple as just doing a Google search. And you're going to find out an alternative, and maybe even with better discounts. So that's where the shift of consumers go to, and that led to that overall drop in terms of, you know, with that change strategy, most consumers would be like, fine, change the strategy, I can find my product somewhere else.
Yeah, but Lucas, is that exactly the problem that companies like Robinson's were facing? You know, you've got these shifting consumer tastes. And then on top of that, rent pressures, how much do these factors put pressure on these businesses?
Let's touch on rent pressures first. I think, firstly, during the pandemic and everything, for most of these malls, they're always dependent on their anchor tenant. To really, I mean, not just during the pandemic, but usually throughout any time period within the year itself, a lot of these malls really, they stick to the anchor tenant to really bring in the customers and also to, you know, cover a large square foot within the mall itself to really cover rental on majority of the property itself. So when the pandemic hit, obviously the anchor tenants are the one that's going to take the most hit. But in that sense, you would expect that anchor tenant to have us because you accepted the contract as anchor tenant, you would kind of have a strategy itself to, you know, bring customers to you. Because as the anchor tenant, let's take, for example, Orchard Central's anchor tenant, which is Uniqlo. Uniqlo, despite the pandemic and everything, and even before the pandemic, they are the main crowd puller towards Orchard Central. And we know that within Orchard Central itself, for most of the shops inside, if you don't even go, most people actually wouldn't know about a lot of the stores within Orchard Central, but they would know that Uniqlo stays there and is there. But for Heeren itself, Robinson has to act like what Uniqlo does, bringing customers in. And over time, you realize that although the Heeren is situated very centrally, very nicely within the stretch of Orchard Road itself, Robinson's is not exactly doing that part of bringing people in. So naturally, because they're not doing that part, they're suffering on two fronts. Number one, they're an anchor tenant. They have to bring people into they're trying to bring people into the mall. Their rent is definitely the most expensive within here in itself. But yeah, that's where they're suffering because you're the anchor tenant. You're not bringing people in. Your rent is the most expensive within the mall itself. So that's number one with that. And then on top of that, it's obviously the shift in consumers' purchasing patterns and everything as well. So are they really, why are people not coming in? And that's the other strategy that they had to probably fix. If not, they were really going to suffer in the long run as well. And unfortunately, that's something that they didn't fix.
When we started this case study, Lucas, I was curious as to whether Robinson's paints a picture for what's to come for department stores. But I look at Ngee Ann City and Takashimaya, they seem to be okay. In your opinion, are they in a better position compared with Robinson's? What are they doing right or what are they doing wrong?
I think the question comes down to, are departmental stores also still relevant in today's consumer market?
Well, I miss SOGO, if that counts for anything.
Yeah. And if you look at OG, you look at Metro, you look at Tangs, and you look at Takashimaya, you look at BHG, they all have a different strategy and they all work towards a target audience that would go back to the departmental store itself. Let's take a look at, like, for example, Takashimaya.
Okay.
The clientele that goes to Takashimaya, who goes, firstly, when we talk about, yes, online shopping is really popular, it's the wave now, everybody is moving towards there. But if you're looking at a target audience who are not exactly the most tech-savvy, if you're looking at a target audience who you're constantly marketing to, who have not made that shift and will not be making that shift onto online shopping and going to the physical store, feeling the products, touching the product, making sure that, you know, you're not buying something dodgy, they don't want to do any kind of exchanges. They're still going to do things like, I'm buying electronical kitchenware, and before I purchase it, I would like to see it being tested right in front of me, in front of my eyes. You know, if you're looking at it, talking to that kind of clientele, then, and you're constantly marketing towards them, and there's a sizable market in terms of revenue that you can get from that particular group of target audience, then you're definitely going to survive in the long run as well because you're looking at that. But if you're looking at the shift in consumers, so for example, in the next 15 years, in the next 20 years, then as a departmental store, you need to be aware that, hey, these group of consumers, well, they're not going to be your target audience in 15, 20 years' time. There's going to be a new batch that's going to reach this particular age group. And, well, they are now savvy maybe in online shopping. So you've got 10, 15, 20 years to really start doing that shift and making sure that, you know, you're accommodating to the new batch of target audience that are going to come in, that are going to be relevant for you in a couple of years' time.
Lucas, look, I'm really fascinated by something. Brief history on me. When I was 13, I went to the United States for the first time. I went to California and I experienced massive malls and department stores in a way I never had growing up in Britain. But they were doing things back then which were really smart when it came to marketing and branding, which the rest of the world didn't catch up with for some time. what struck me about Singapore department stores was I always felt, why is, I'm always asked this question, why did everything feel so behind the curve? And also, mm-hmm. you know, why does SOGO work in, say, Times Square in Hong Kong and then didn't mm-hmm. work here? Like, is this mm-hmm. an anomaly? What is this?
Well, it is, in a way, you can say it's an anomaly, but it's always about, you know, meeting the mass market needs in the country itself. Do we need to have a shift within the retail market as we're talking about it today to hit the masses instead of focusing on, you know, one particular group or target audience, as I was speaking just now? Yes, we sorely need to do that. Is there a departmental store who has revolutionized the market in terms of marketing, branding strategy, in terms of different platforms that are available for consumers to shop, and not just adopt the platforms, but creating it a similar departmental store experience that will really get the consumers excited? Unfortunately, no, that's not happening. If you look at the retail numbers in Singapore, why is there a dip in everything? You really see that it's not the entire, the retail industry is actually still surviving, but a lot of the revenue share is actually coming from the e-commerce market today. Does that mean that departmental stores have no future in Singapore? What do they need to do? Well, if you just look at the situations of what's happening around the world, I think looking at China's Tmall, Alibaba's Tmall is one great example of how they've revolutionized retail into new retail. And when you look at their version of new retail and embedding digital technology within the mall itself, where you have integrated mirrors in the toilets, where you can use virtual reality to actually look at products and how they will look on yourself within the mirror itself at their vending machines immediately if you like it to actually purchase it, or you can, you know, continue browsing, or you can go to the store, things like that. A lot of that, it's not just having it on an online platform, because when you just go on an online platform, you're not going to compete with the likes of Shopee and Lazada, which they have a sizable market share over there. And in terms of prices, it's honestly quite impossible to compete, you know. But when you look at embedding the digital technology within the mall itself to create a new customer experience, to make it more interactive, more fun, are retailers doing that? Are the departmental stores actually doing that? Unfortunately, no. They're adopting digital technology in terms of just the platforms. Oh, online sales are going higher. Let's just put our stuff online. Let's have a mobile app for it. And that would create the experience for customers. But that's not the right strategy moving forward. You've got to use it to create a new experience for customers and not just, oh yeah, we're going online and you can purchase things online. That's not going to work well for your marketing and branding, because honestly, what's your USP at the end of the day?
Yeah.
There is no unique selling point there still. Yeah.
And it failed terribly for Robinsons. They actually have an e-commerce website. Who knows mm-hmm. about it, right?
Yeah.
I've got an idea. We should market comfortable sofas in department stores for the husbands so that the husbands will be more willing to bring the wives shopping.
I'll tell you
and
what.
They sit on the sofa.
Depends on the family, man. Depends on the family.
All right, Lucas, unfortunately, we've got to keep it there. Great conversation, by the way. We've been speaking with Lucas Tok, who is Section Head, Digital Marketing and Branding, School of Business, Singapore Polytechnic. Thank you for your time. Take care and stay safe.
No worries. Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.